Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to The Mentor. I'm Mark Boris. Now, they say the only thing that's certain in life is death and taxes. I can tell you one of them is definitely certain. Well, today on the show, we're going 6 feet under and talking about the business of death. There's always a need for funeral services. It's one of the few services that are never in short supply. We have a big demand and a growing demand for funeral services now and in the future. But just like death, many of us don't really understand how funeral services operate behind the scenes. We've got no idea how the business side of things works. And my guest today is Matthew Crocker, the owner of Southern Cross Funeral Directors. He owns a number of funeral homes across Sydney. They're one of the few funeral home services that have remained independent and are still family-owned in an industry that's dominated by conglomerates. Southern Cross Funeral Homes sets itself apart by educating people about the process of what happens when someone passes away. When people are grieving, they're not in the right state of mind. So, how on earth do you market something that no one wants to know about until they're forced to? I'm also going to delve into how Matt actually got involved in owning Southern Cross Funeral Services, because it's very interesting how Matt navigated the relationship he had with the previous owner, overlaid against his own employment, and somehow one day he ended up owning that business at a point in time where Matt was either going to leave or buy the business. That is a very, very delicate dance indeed. So let's get into it. Matt Crocker, welcome to The Mentor.
Thank you, Mark. Pleasure to be here.
I love your chair.
Oh, thanks. It's a bit of a different out there, colourful piece in the house that made its way in here quite some time ago. Never got rid of it.
It looks like Joseph's Technicolor coat.
It does, doesn't it? Pretty cool. A lot of people come in and make comments on it and go, yeah, it sticks out.
So I have to ask you this question. Like, when I saw your name, how often do you get ribbed about the name Crocker?
Heaps, 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 heaps. I get called Crocker. I get all sorts of things. People don't know how to pronounce it. It's, you know, just answer to what I'm called, I suppose.
Is Crocker right?
Yeah, Quoker, Crocker. Yep, it's fine.
Quoker. But where's that name originate from?
It's from Poland, actually.
It's a Polish name.
My grandfather. Yeah, it's a Polish name, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Just because, I've been over to Rottnest Island and the little Crockers running around there everywhere. They're not yours, are they?
Yeah, no, they're not. But I've got a few photos with them on my phone, so that's pretty cool.
So just tell me a little bit about Matt Crocker.
Okay, so me, I'm 44. I've got two wonderful kids, boy who's 7, girl who's 4, who I thought was 5 yesterday, and I was a few days out on her birthday, which was great, father of the year.
Oh, my God.
I had the kids with a really good friend of mine, Amanda. So we've worked great as a team, and we raised the children together. I've got an amazing partner called Neil, who's also got 2 kids. So we're quite a modern family with 4 kids in total. So it's a really busy, amazing life, and yeah.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up around in Sydney, so grew up around South Hurstville and Southern Sydney. So still residing in the area, haven't left.
I used to go to a swimming pool in Hurstville, near just sort of behind the railway station there, and I used to do my swimming training there. And it's like an indoor pool, 25-minute indoor pool. And I used to be under the – I used to train there like every morning and every evening under a guy called Don Talbot. Is that swimming pool still there?
Cole Jones is still there.
Cole Jones, yes, he came in after Don Jones. Talbot.
Yes, yes, so it's still there, that pool. It's amazing. That's where I learned to swim myself.
So Cole Jones is still there?
It's still there to this day, yep.
Nah, he must be ancient. Like Cole Jones taught my brother who's like – like 10 years younger or 7 years younger than me. So, yeah, wow, that's – and that's going back like 40 years more, 50 – yeah. 60, nearly 60-odd years, 55 years or something. Wow, that's cool. I was – I used to swim there on a guy called Don Talbot. And Don Talbot, he became the Olympic coach. He had somewhat of a tough reputation. And in those days, he wouldn't be able to get away with things he used to get away with in those days. Yeah. He used to get away with those days. But – wow, it was actually a really good period in my life. Actually, it taught me a lot about discipline that I didn't know. You wouldn't be able to get away with the kids today because they'd lock you up if he did the sort of things that they were doing to us. But all right. So, and you went? Where did you go to school?
I went to school Penshurst Morris. So I'm a Morris boy.
Morris Brothers boy, yeah.
Yeah.
And so you got four kids. You and Neil. Four kids. It's Neil, was it?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
You got four kids.
It is three boys and a girl. So they all call each other brother and sisters, and, you know, we all get on great. It's just a really, really great family.
You're pretty young for a father these days, 44.
Oh.
You're lucky.
Yeah. Well, I've got mates whose kids are like 18, 19. So, you know, I feel quite old compared to some. Yeah, so, yeah, a lot of my mates had kids young. So,
well, my oldest boy is 40 this year.
Whoa, 40. Well done.
40. Yeah, he'll kill you for saying that. But he's 40 this year, yeah. And, you know, that's mad, I know. I keep thinking I'm still 25 or 30 myself, but yeah, he's 40. Shit.
So do I.
Yep. Can you describe to me your business?
Okay, so we are funeral directors. So we have offices throughout Sydney and the Central Coast. We're there with families to help say goodbye to someone they love. So, you know, For me, I've been surrounded by death a majority of my life because the original owners of the business were family friends. We, you know, and I've been exposed to it a majority of my life. And when I got into the business, every day's different. So I just love dealing with people, and we help families say goodbye to people they love.
Okay. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about the business. I guess I want to – I mean, I don't – I've never – I do. I have a mate who has a sort of an online funeral business, that sort of thing, which is a tough business to be in. But I don't know much about it. But I've never really known anybody in the funeral business other than when I went to school at La Kemba. My teacher, was a pretty influential person in all the kids in my class lives during the period, lived on top of a funeral director's business in La Kemba. And I think it was called J. Walter Sons or something like that, Walter J. Sons, which became Simplicity Funerals or something like that. Anyway, I used to think in my mind when he used to come to school, because he lived up there on top of the funeral parlour with his family, his mum and dad and his brother. His brother became a priest and he lived up there. And I used to have this imagination that there was all these dead bodies down there in the funeral parlour on top of where he lived all the time. And it used to be not a macabre thought for me, but like – I said, you know, like sort of a bit freaky for me. And I always wondered how the hell he got involved in the funeral business or living on top of a funeral parlor. And so I guess my same question to you is, how the hell did you get involved in the funeral business? Take me through where a young Matt Quokka was, say, when he was 20. Like, what was he thinking about?
Well, I had flower shops, so I've actually did my floristry, and I had two flower shops in the area. And then what happened was one of the owners of Southern Cross unfortunately suffered a stroke, and we were doing all the flowers for the business. Just by default, I went in to give them a hand with a few accounting issues and a few bits and pieces with the business. And I walked in the door and I just looked around and thought, wow, this is pretty amazing. Like, these people are just helping people through one of the toughest times of their lives. And it was actually by default I actually got into the industry because I walked in the door and I had the flower shop. So I was still like doing two things, and then something had to give. So I started working for the funeral home full time. And every day is different. And I just loved what I did. You know, you've got to have compassion and empathy. And, you know, if you're someone that's got a lot to give, it suited me down to a T.
Would you consider yourself as being both sympathetic and empathetic? Like, are they two important traits that you possess, do you think?
Yeah, I do. I was brought up by European parents. We were brought up with consequence for actions. We were taught to respect our elders. We were taught to listen to people. And we were taught not to judge. You know, at school I had a fight with the kid because my mum's got Croatian background and he was Serbian. And when we were kids, the racial hatred between the two countries was very prevalent. We got into a fight and we were called into the principal brother's office. And my friend's father was there and mum was there. And mum just went smash across my head. And she went, you know, you've got one head, two arms and two legs. It doesn't matter where he came from. It's old hatred. Why are you carrying this here now? And that was a really big wake-up call for me, Mark, because I thought to myself, wow, she's right. You know, and we were brought up in a household where, we did something wrong. Like my dad said to me, you can do whatever you, when I was 16, he goes, you can do whatever you want, son. And I went, woohoo. And then he said, but if you think I'm not going to be happy, it's safer you don't do it.
Yeah, otherwise you leave.
That's exactly right. You know, so we always shown love and that by my parents, but we were brought up to respect and listen and treat everyone the same.
So I'm big on, I guess everyone does. We all make judgments on people, and and whilst we make it's part of our evolution. We make assessments of people, probably a better word. And my assessment of you is you're highly strung. Like you're moving around a lot.
Now, hyperactive. I think with me, it's. I try to do one. My philosophy is I try to do one thing every day that scares me, and you know being in situations that I'm not used to. I'm not used to sitting in podcasts or on shows or in interviews. So that's just me personally. And of course, with time, I will relax more with it. But for me, my life is go, go, go. And it's great that it's like that because when I slow down, and in the past, it's proven when I've gone on holidays, Mark, I get sick because my body just goes, wow, you've stopped. So I always keep myself
probably good.
On the go. Yeah, yeah, it is.
But do you get bored easy?
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. So bored with sort of something you're doing, like a business boredom or a – you need stimulus.
Yeah, definitely. I find it hard to sit still.
I can see that. Yep.
Yeah. I like to keep busy. I think for me, when it gets too much for me, I shut down. So my head gets full and I just go, you know what, I need a day out to myself. And I catch up with what I need to do, and that helps me. I think in my business, because every day is different, I love that. It's, you know, I get stimulated every day. I get to meet amazing people every day. I work with amazing people. But for me, this highly strungness is because it's just the way I've always been. I've always been someone that likes to keep busy. You know, for me to sit down and watch a TV show, I watch an hour worth of TV a night. That's about it. But I'm always, on the go. That's just who I am, I suppose.
I can feel it. That's sort of the sense I'm getting from. I mean, do you have Netflix?
Yes.
Are you one of those people when you turn Netflix on who says, continue to watch, there's like about 50 shows you've watched half of?
Yes, 100%. 100%, Mark. Look, for me too, I think with what I see every day with work, I try to absorb as much as I can. I try to do as much as I can. And as a result of that, I'm constantly busy. And for me, when I sit down and relax, my mind starts ticking away, thinking I've got to do this, I've got to do that. So there's no point me sitting down until I know in my head I've gotten everything done I need to do.
So if I go back to when you were running the florist, why did you decide to go into that industry, the floral industry?
Because when I was young, I had a really good, my best friend at the time, she was a florist and I used to help her in the shop. And then when I got to a stage when I was about 21, 22, I was working for GIO at the time. And I just thought I wanted to try something different. So I went and did a floral course. I opened up a little business at South Hurstville and I got staff on board and we grew it and we went really well. And then we got another shop in the area. And I liked that too because every day was different. I'd go to the flower markets myself. I'd work in the shop. I would, you know, do all the buying. And that's what I did for about 6 years.
Tough business though.
Oh, it is. especially if you have corporates or weddings or things like that as well. It was a tough business, but I enjoyed it. But for me, I felt like I could do more and I wanted to do more. And that's why when I started helping the previous owners of Southern Cross, it was like a new zest. So that then got my interest. And I started learning about the business, and then it turned out that I had the opportunity to buy it and went from there, because, you know, that was really important. And I got to learn a lot about the funeral industry as well. So the floristry industry is quite small.
Yeah, that is. And it's tough. And because you are competing with the online industry, which is, correct. What's interesting though is for me is that as a result of your family sort of background, you got to get involved in this funeral business.
Correct.
And it was called Southern Cross then?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
And what were you doing there? I mean, apart from helping, when you said you're helping out with accounts and stuff, but what, like, I don't know, you know, it sounds like there's cadavers everywhere and you've got to shove them in boxes and stuff, but what were you actually doing there?
The way the business was set up and still is that we have a central holding facility where all the deceased are held, with all of our fleet and our client services teams. So I was more in the admin and office side of things, but there were days where, they would have 8 or 9 funerals on in one day and they needed staff. So I went out onto a service and the owner's son at the time turned around to me and goes, okay, you're conducting this funeral. And I went, I don't know what I'm doing. And he went, you'll be right, you can conduct. And he goes, you've seen what we do on a few times, you can do it. And I never forget, I was just petrified, but I went down, I thought, you know what, I'm going to do it. And I went down and, you know, I then conducted the service. Then when I got back to the office, I thought, you know what, I'm going to test myself at arranging a funeral. So then our industry still to this day is handwritten paper for a lot of funeral providers. And so I did arranging and I got to sit with families, and I would sit with the family and say, look, you know, I'm learning and I'm new at this. Are you okay if we work together? And of course they were fine, because as long as you're upfront with people, they're fine.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So then I saw, like, we'll go through, because a lot of the forms, it's just filling in forms, a lot of the arranging of a funeral. And so I taught myself that, and, you know, I would listen to staff when they were doing arrangings in other rooms. But I taught myself that, and then I thought, you know, we can do this better. There's a better way to do this. It doesn't have to be an hour and a half consultation with the family when they're watching you handwrite 8 or 9 children's names. We've got to get some sort of system in place. So then, when I purchased the business, I've been developed and still developing a system that I've built that everything's just done via the computer. And it's been really helpful during COVID, because we can do things online via Zoom and people don't have to come into our sites. We can do everything online. So it's proven to be really helpful and beneficial to the business as well, because now we've got a digital record of everything, because all of the paperwork before is all archived. So we've got, I think, about 28,000 files in archives, because everything was handwritten.
Sounds like a lot of interesting data, actually.
A lot of interesting data.
How did you come to buy the business? Tell me about that. Like, so here you are working in this business. I guess you're in your 20s or something like that.
I was in my 30s, early 30s. The owner that had the stroke passed away, and the owner that was left, he had been in the business for a very long time. And it is a very, very hard business to be in, because you're dealing with people's emotions on a daily basis. You're seeing people grieve, and there's such a massive spectrum to grief. And so he sort of started taking a backward step, and it got to the stage where I just said, look, you know, you've lost sight on what it is to care. You know, we've got to start caring. We've got to start implementing changes. We've got to keep up with the times of the industry. And he's going, no, we do it this way, we do it that way. And, you know, with any business, you have to morph with the times. You have to change and keep up with the times. And unfortunately, an amazing man, absolutely amazing man, but, you know, was stuck in his ways. So it basically got to the stage one day where I said, you know what, it started becoming a toxic environment for me, because I was taking on the weight of the world, and I was, you know, having buffers stopped when I wanted to implement something or do something. So one day I just said, look, you know what, we're at a crossroads. We've got to make a decision here. Either you sell or I walk. And the decision was, he'll sell. So I then bought the business out from him, and he retired to the country. And then, but then too, with any business, when something's been ran a certain way and stagnant for such a long time, and when you have staff that have been there, like we had staff that had worked for him for 30 years, you know, people of change management is extremely, extremely hard in any business. So, you know, and especially someone who's younger. So a lot of the staff were my parents' age. So they've got this young kid in their eyes coming in saying, hey, we're going to do this. We're going to implement that. We're going to try this and trial it. It didn't go too well with some of the staff. For me, it was, if you know, we've got to work together. We're a team. And if we don't work together, well, then something's got to give.
Did you, and there's nothing wrong with this, by the way, I'm not going to make a judgment at all. I just want to know, did you knowingly build yourself up to be so important to the business that you knew that one day you could either take over this business or you could walk? Or did it just happen that way and you woke up one morning and thought, you know, I'm over this shit game that I'm here. I don't like the way this place has been run. I'm going to just put it to him straight out. Either I buy it or I leave.
For me, my belief is they replace the two most important people in my eyes on the planet, which is the Pope and the President of the United States, right? Everyone's replaceable. There's no one that has that much power that they're the be-all and end-all. For me, I was stagnant, so I was being held back, and I knew that I would be an asset to any business that I went into. Now, if he turned around and said, get staffed, I would have gone, okay, fine, nothing ventured, nothing gained.
Would you have gone to a competitor?
No, I would have gone into the corporate arena, I think.
Right. You wouldn't have gone into the same game, though?
No, I honestly don't believe so, no.
All right. So it wasn't more about you putting him in a position where you might compete with him, but it was more you putting him in a position that he was going to have a hole in his business as a result of you leaving.
Maybe not. But, like, for me, I wanted to do better. I wasn't happy. So the whole thing for me, learning what I'd learned in the time that I'd worked with him was, you know, every day is different, and the position that you're in your life at the moment is a result of the choices and the decisions that you've made. So, you know, I've had people who have said to me, oh, you know, this is crap and, oh, my life's like this, and I look at them and go, well, you know what? What have you done that's led you there? Now, for me, seeing people and working with families that have lost a little baby or a child, you look at that and you think, you know what, there's someone who's got drama in their life. There's someone who's doing it tough, right? But for me, most of the things in life are inconsequential in my eyes because you can change it. You've got the power in yourself to change it. And that's where I was at that time. I wasn't happy. I wasn't, you know, it was, for me, I knew I could give and do more. And I actually had in my head I wasn't going to stay in the funeral industry. I was going to go into the corporate arena because I know I could give a lot to a corporate company. But then when he turned around, he thought about it. When I came, let's do this. I went, fine. You know, I didn't dictate. At the end of the day, he was the person that was holding all the cards. He was the owner of the business, and it was his call as to whether he kept it or to whether he sold it. And I could have been replaced by anyone. There could be someone out there that was better at doing things than I was. You know,
you really believe that?
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, I did, Mark. In all honesty, yeah. I did. I'm not, for me, I look at life as every day is a lesson and instances as a lesson. And, like, to me, I'm learning every day. I can always better myself, right? And at that situation, at that time, and I remember I got up and we had the discussion. I went, you know what? What will be, will be. The Beatles song, you know, Let It Be, rings in my head all the time.
You know, because I find this extremely interesting, I'll be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I find you really interesting, especially as an employer myself, as a proprietor. Mm-hmm. I have people in my business, you know, and I'm always looking for someone like you. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm looking out for someone like you for different reasons. The question becomes for proprietors and people who are listening to the show, do I encourage people like Matt Quokka into my business and encourage their, you know, the way they behave and the way they operate? Mm-hmm. And do I discourage it and try and control the situation or put myself in that it's perilous, can be perilous position to put yourself into you have a Matt Quokka in your business. But equally, if you don't have a Matt Quokka in your business, it can be equally perilous because you need people like Matt Quokka. So, I mean, how do you stop yourself from not crumbling with the grief you're presented with?
You can't. I've cried at funeral services.
Yeah, you cried genuinely?
I have genuinely cried, yep. I genuinely hold, you know, I wouldn't be human. You couldn't be human. Like, to work in this industry, you need to be a special person, right? You have to have feelings and emotion. You have to be able, I can't relate to a person that's lost their child because I've never been in that position, okay? But what you can do, you can listen to them. I say to all my staff, and this goes for me as well, if you are emotional and you want to shed a tear, don't hold it back, because that shows that we're human. Yes, we're here to do a job. Yes, we are here to be extremely professional. But at the end of the day, we are also here to support the people left behind. The special person that works in this industry, he's someone who has a lot to give. Not necessarily a person that's lost someone they love. It's someone who has a personality that they can relate to people, that they can speak to people, they can listen, they can come up with ideas and coping mechanisms for people. Like, I've had people get into massive fights in front of me in an office, and I've said, hey, this isn't the time nor the place. So for me in this industry, corporate's different, in my opinion. Corporate, when you're in a big company and you've got a role as on the senior management team, you are expected to perform, okay? Big companies have KPIs. In my business, I'll be honest, I don't set KPIs for my staff. If my staff member, if a person comes in off the street and they are genuinely struggling, my staff have the authority to give discounts. My staff have the authority to give something for free because they've all got my back. For me, I've never run my business on KPIs, and I never will, because for me, you cannot take advantage of people's grief. Every situation is different. Every death is different. So for me, for my business, I'm only as good as the team I have representing me. And a lot of my team are my family and very close friends. Something goes wrong, I go off my head. Now, in the corporate arena, HR would be on my ass, quick smart. Because, you know, you have one chance to do this funeral and do this funeral properly and deliver a service that you can only do once, really.
Yeah, you're right. You can't make good.
No. Yeah, that's right. You can get married 3, 4, 5, 10 times. You know, you can have birthday parties, anytime, anything. But with a funeral, because emotions are extremely high, we got one chance to get it right. And that's why I say to my staff, like, I've made staff cry. They've told me to F off. I've told them to F off. But you know what? Once it's said and done, it's said and done. If I'm wrong and I'm out of line, I will hold my hand up and go, you know what? I apologize. I was out of line. And it is hard because you are dealing with emotions. And sometimes a staff member might be doing a really, that I don't know about. They've dealt with a very difficult situation or a family, and they haven't told me about it. And then it comes out later. And I go, but why don't you talk to me about it? You know, because my staff, we're all human. We all have emotion. You wouldn't be human if you didn't have emotion. But in the corporate arena, in my opinion, it's a lot different to the funeral sector. You know, yes, our industry is conglomerately owned. There are big conglomerates that are players in our industry. Yes, they have KPIs. Yes, they're listed on the stock market. I'm an independent family-owned business. My mum, my auntie, my best mate, they work for me, and I have staff also. But they've all worked for me for a long time, and we all have each other's backs.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, and at our last meeting, I said, if you don't want to come into work, do not ever bullshit me and go, I'm sick, I'm not coming in. If you don't want to come in and you don't have much on in the day, I would respect you a lot more if you ring me and you go, you know what, Matt, I need a mental health day. I'm not coping. I just need a day off to myself. I won't dock your holidays, and I don't. If they genuinely come to me and they say, look, I need a day off, take it.
What about if they don't genuinely come to you and they bullshit you?
I've never had that situation arise, and that's honestly.
In your industry, given that people are dealing, you're very rarely going to deal with happy deaths or happy families when someone's passed away.
Yeah.
Are you saying to me, because it's by definition, there's you know, you're a deliverer of grief management. You know, that's sort of what you do in some respects. That people in your business, because they're empathetic, they tend to wear a bit of the grief. I mean, I'm talking about your staff. And as a result of that, over time, there will be people who will break at different points within your business, and you'd rather them just stay home and have a break.
For me, look, when people come in to see us, they've got their business hat on. So they've suffered the initial loss and they're ready to plan. Okay, so rarely during an arrangement or consultation do you have people absolutely hysterical. Very rarely. I could list on one hand over the years of the people that I've dealt with. It's actually when you deliver the service that the grief is prevalent. Okay, and it comes out, because that's the closure of the service. But the thing is, even when you're doing the consultation staff, because they're booking everything and liaising with the family, especially if there's family friction or there's a fracture, it's very hard on the consultant. But the team that deliver, if there's a fracture, family stay on this side, other family stay on that side, so it's divided.
But you can see that, can you? You see where there's sort of families who are sort of like, you know, because it's a bit like Christmas. Sometimes, you know, you have family functions and you wish everybody's all wonderful, but it's rarely the case, particularly the bigger the family it gets. There's always factions within the family, so to speak, or fractures within the family. So I guess what happens is when you have a funeral, you're going to have those things become pretty obvious, do they?
Well, everyone has their own ideas on how they want to say goodbye. Everyone grieves differently. So the thing is, it's like if there's a fracture, like there's an amazing poem by a poet called Linda Ellis called The Dash. And a part of it is, you know, it doesn't matter how much you own, the cars, the boat, the cash. What matters is how you live and love and how you spend your dash, right? And it's very true, because you're born with nothing, you leave with nothing, okay? And when I have families, I had brothers years ago and they hadn't talked for years. And I read that poem, pardon me, out to them. And they looked at me and they went, my God, that's beautiful. And one of them started crying. And they went and they reconciled in front of me at the office, right? Because it's true. Like when you're planning, when you lose someone you love, you've got your ideas on what you want to say and what you want to do. Your brother or sister might have an idea on what they'd say and what they want to do. And then sometimes the partners get involved. And it just, you know, and that's why I tend to say to people, you know, guys, who's the executor or who's my point of contact? Because sometimes you can have a lot of chiefs and not enough Indians, and you get and mixed messages can come across and errors can occur. So that's why you've got to, you know, a majority of the people that engage our services have no idea what to do. So we have to guide them. And if you're open, honest and transparent and say, this is how it works, this is the process, this is the expectation, this is, the guidelines of what's to happen, they go, never have I had someone go, oh, well, I don't like that, because you can do whatever you want.
That's interesting. I've got to go to the break, Matt, and we're going to come back to the
Sure, mate.
I really want to talk to you about I never really thought it through, but I'm fascinated with the actual politics of the funeral service and how you train people to distribute those politics or work through those politics. And secondly, how do you market a funeral service business? So let's go to the break. So I'm here with Matt Quacker, and Matt's the CEO and the proprietor of a business called Southern Cross Funeral Directors. I think we should just quickly talk about how the industry works, because you've got some absolute corporate giants in the industry who sort of control a lot of the stuff, like where burials are held, who owns the ground, where people are put into the ground if they're being buried, who owns the crematoriums, etc. Can you just paint a little bit of a picture how the structure of the funeral industry is and where Southern Cross fits? What's the service that your group performs?
Historically, funeral directors were all independently family owned. In the 80s, an American conglomerate called SCI came into the Australian market and they started buying up independent funeral homes. So what happened then was they started buying all the family businesses to build a brand. So SCI is a big player in the States. they bought brands like White Lady Funerals, Simplicity, Guardian, and put a lot of independent funeral homes under the Guardian brand. Very good provider. They then bought cemeteries and crematoria as well. So the independent family-owned provider was really diminished to a very small amount of people. Over the years since, and they've now merged into InvoCare, which are a great service provider. They do cemeteries and crematoria. With some of the independents that were left, the proprietors were getting older. So some of the independent players started buying three or four more brands and put them under their umbrella. So there's quite a few independent brands that are still owned by a larger umbrella. Independents such as ourselves, there's not a huge amount in the country. Yes, there's a lot of still family-owned providers, but in city, there's, you know, there are still some.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And a few other players. But what we do is, because we're family and because we're independent, Mark, we have the ability to not bend the rules, but we have the ability to tailor services to a family's needs. When you have a big player, they have their guidelines and their minimals and their KPIs, whereas we don't do that in our business. For me, Southern Cross, I've prided myself on it being family owned and independent. It always has been and hopefully always will. But with the industry being majority owned by conglomerates, it's you know, a lot of people don't know that. And that's why education is so important. Our industry is not a highly regulated industry either. It needs to be regulated. So there's so many facets of the death sector and funeral industry that the general public and the community have no idea.
I sort of had a bit of a sense that your industry as such was sort of controlled by some really big players.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are a number of independents like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore you have to differentiate yourself as an independent from, say, the conglomerates or the aggregators. What do you think you offer that is a better service, so to speak, than what, say, the conglomerates offer?
Well, the feedback that we often get is that families love the fact that they're talking to the owner of the business, the actual boss. They love the fact that they can contact the actual owner of the business. They love the fact that they're dealing with the owner of the business's mother or auntie. Or, you know, I keep my finger in every facet of the business. So I will do arranging. I'll go out on funeral services. I will take deceased into care. I will prepare deceased. There's no facet of my business that I don't know, because I don't expect my staff to do a task that I don't know how to do myself. So that's how we differentiate ourselves. And we also differentiate ourselves through education. So we've started up a site called Death Defined with Matt Quoker, where we talk to normal people in the community. It's on YouTube. We've got a YouTube channel.
Yep.
We've got socials for it as well, Facebook, things like that. Death Defined is more of we started this up for education. So the first thing that we've done is we've gotten people in to ask me questions they've always wanted to know about death. What happens, how it works, my experiences. And it's given me an insight, because we did a survey of 1,000 participants. We actioned a survey to find out the public's response and knowledge of death. And the results were quite surprising. Like 50% of people didn't even discuss death with their parents or didn't know anything about it. People don't even think about death. People don't think about their own mortality until they're older. People are scared of their mortality, but it's the only thing we the only thing we really have to do is die. You know, we're here, we can make an impact, but I don't know who my great-great-great-great-grandparents were. You know, unless you make a mark during your life, you're forgotten. And this is the big thing that I look at, is that I wanted to educate people that death isn't taboo. It's not scary. You know, it's something that we all have to face, and every single person on this planet in 150 years is not going to be here. When you think of things like that, it's quite an amazing thought.
Well, that's what I was saying. There's not only thing certain in life is death and taxes.
That's exactly.
Can I ask you, is your YouTube like a series of episodes?
Yes, it is. They go for about 20 minutes, half an hour each episode. Yep. I got one, Felice and Billy. They were a couple, one from a Muslim background, who were speaking about their experiences on death and their thoughts on death.
So they're case studies.
Sort of like case studies, yeah, and people's experiences, and people who are interested in death, they don't have an outlet or someone to talk to about it. So they've sort of like come on and said, hey, these are my questions. What are your thoughts on this? Or how does this work? You know, is the coffin actually cremated? And it's like, yeah, it is. You have to cremate the coffin. So these are all the things. It's sort of like an information outlet that we've put up that people can, who are interested in death and have questions, that may be answered there.
Yeah, that's cool. I quite like it. But I think it's a smart thing. Do you do this as part of your marketing program, though?
We do.
Squarely put it there?
Yes, we do. But marketing death is such a difficult thing to market, because you're dealing with people's raw emotions and you don't want to offend people. And like for me, when we started redoing all of our marketing and, you know, and revisited it, my whole thing was, I don't want to be in people's faces. When people ring us up for a quote, all my staff and I say, you have to feel comfortable with the person you select or engage to look after someone in your life that you love very much. So it's not a hard sell. You can't hard sell death because you offend. You can't pressure people. When people are grieving, they're not in the right state of mind sometimes. So what we do is this whole education thing that we look at. We give the family the choice and the options. And for me, I want people to engage our services who want to engage our services. They don't engage us for price point. They don't engage us because we're local. They don't engage us, you know. I've had families in before that I've said to them, I don't think I'm the right funeral director for you. Now, for a business owner to do that is a big thing, but for me, two, as a person that someone's entrusting me, that's a huge responsibility. Trusting a person or a business with someone who's made such an impact on your life. Whether you know, I had this man in years ago, and he goes, I want to dress my mum. And I went, okay. And I was in the mortuary with him, and he got a cloth and he rubbed her hands, and he went, these are the hands that disciplined me. And he went through every part of this woman's body. As a good boy, and I'm there, and I was crying, Mark. It was the most beautiful thing I've ever witnessed in my life, because I thought, you know, he said, these are the arms that cuddled me, these are the legs that carried me as a child, and it was just, he had a story for every part of his mother's 90, however old she was, body, and that was a real eye opener for me, and I thought it's such a delicate thing, and that was sort of like an epiphany for me where I thought I'd never want to push my brand on people. I never want to force people into doing something they don't want to do.
That's cool. Yeah. Interesting. I would love to see if you had filmed that sort of thing. That would be fantastic.
it was something I'll never forget.
Yeah, you will never forget it. Man, I would love to see that I would actually like to see that in a film version. Mm. That would be a great episode of that particular individual. Beautiful. So your business, and I often say this to people when it comes to social mediums in particular, that social mediums are there to either educate or entertain or both.
Mm-hmm.
If you're educating, you're entertaining, and it comes down then to the way you deliver it.
Yeah, I want to make it different, and it is different because it's no longer in this day and age, Mark, it's no longer about mourning a death. It's celebrating a life. It's celebrating the impact that individual has had on their social circle. And like for me, I don't change who I am. When I'm with the family, like, yes, you know, you have to read a family. If you have a family in there that's grieving heavily, yes, you know, you do pull yourself back. You are a bit more professional, as in, I'm not saying I'm not professional, but you hold back. Whereas if you have a family that are extremely relaxed and they can, and they, you know, they can have a joke and a laugh and, you know, you join in with them.
So you're trying to read the market.
Yeah, you have to read the family, the individual. You have to read the individual. You don't know who the individual is when they engage you because you meet them after they engage you.
It's funny you should say, because, I mean, like my family, or part of my family, are Greek, my dad's side. And, I mean, I guess you've done a few Greek funerals, and they're pretty full on. In fact, they bring in people who are like professional whalers when they're lowering the body into the grave. And it's pretty scary. I remember as a kid going to this thing, my God, I was traumatized. Well, not quite, but I was like, what the hell was going on? And people were like, as they're lowering the thing and then they're throwing the dirt in, and everyone gets a chance to throw a bit of dirt in. Like these people, like that's the biggest impact on me as a kid. I remember these people were like crying and sort of thinking, who the hell are they? I don't know them. They're not even part of our family. And they bring them in because they add the atmosphere in the theatre to the funeral. It's nearly like you know, we got to grieve and we got to show that we're grieving. If you're not showing you're grieving in the way that is the tradition, there's something wrong with it. But then on the other side of it, you mentioned it, there's funerals where there's music and it's all happy and people are celebrating. So that tells me that I guess that's like reading the tea leaves. I mean, you and your staff have to read the situation and go along with whatever the situation or the momentum is. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Exactly. You have to read. You have to, like, you have to understand what the family's needs and wants are. You have to understand and not only deliver it, but exceed what they're looking for. You know, you need to take ownership. And you know what, Mark, in any business, sometimes the ball's dropped. Thankfully, we've implemented the tools that in the 10 years I've had the business has been like one or two. We're very lucky. But if something happens, you own it. And, you know, as I said to you at the beginning, if you are transparent and honest with your client, and you work with them, there's no excuse for them to get upset, you know. And with something as delicate as a funeral, it's got to be done right, and you've got to do what the family wants.
All right, that's how you sort of process your business. Mm. I mean, what message do you market for a funeral director?
Mm-hmm. The message that we basically send out to people is that, you know, we're independent, we're Australian owned, we care, we listen, which a lot of other funeral providers do. But for us, it's the whole non-pressure aspect. It's the whole, like, when someone rings up for a quotation, my staff all say, you know, if you have anything else, regardless of our services being engaged or you have any questions, ring. That's what we're here for. The message that we market is that we're there, we're around you when it matters. So our thing is around you. So we're around you when it mattered. We're around you when you need us. You know, we're around. That's what Southern Cross is. We are around you.
So is that like a strap line?
Yeah, around you. Yep, that's what we use, around you. Yeah. And that came to me because we had a really big funeral service a few years ago now. And, you know, I spoke to the family afterwards. I said, you know, how'd you find everything? Everything okay? And they went, you know what, Matt? It's you were around the whole time, but you weren't in our face. And that stuck with me. And I went, you know what? And I went, what do you mean by that? And she said, we're there when we needed you. We had your direct mobile number. You could email you. We could call you anytime. And you were there. But on the day of the service, you stood back. You had all our needs catered for. Your team did. And you were around. And I'm like, okay, thank you. I thought, wow, great, fantastic. That's what we're going to use, around you.
That's a good one. So we care and we support.
There's a point of contact. Yeah. And see, the thing is too, Matt, like even with us, we've gotten calls from certain denominations and families. And you know, for me, and this is hand on my heart, I had a family call me, and we've got great providers in our industry that cater to Arabic-speaking families or Greek-speaking families. And, you know, so one of the questions I have, if I, you know, and this happened a couple of years, months ago, had a lady ring, she had a very strong accent. I said, look, do you mind where I ask, you know, if I ask where you come from? She goes, oh, you know, we come from Lebanon. I went, okay. And I said, you know, they wanted a burial, and I said, okay. And I said, look, will a lot of people be speaking Arabic on the service? And she said, yep. And I went, okay. I said, look, we do a beautiful service. We are amazing at what we do. However, if you've got a lot of elderly people that can only understand Arabic, these are the providers that I'll get you to also ring for a quotation. because I don't have the resources of Arabic speaking staff. And to me, I would rather lose a funeral like that and pass it on to a colleague in the industry, another independent, than take the business on and not deliver by having Arabic speaking staff that people don't understand and take instruction on the day so things fall apart. So you need, you know, and that's what I say to all my staff. If we get, you know, if we think that there's something that we can help the family better by doing, I will pass that work on. And we do.
Because the damage you could do to your brand by stuffing it up is probably nearly irretrievable. I mean, like,
correct.
Like you're better off passing it to somebody else than running the risk of stuffing it up.
It's not worth the money and the damage it can cause.
Is your industry, in terms of your pricing, I mean, it sounds a bit cold-hearted to talk about it, but yeah. In your industry, pricing, I mean, it's you got to make a margin. That's where you make your money.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is it a price competitive business?
100%. 100%, Mark. So basically, yeah, people are shopping around. People do, and I implore people to shop
around. Oh, really?
Shop around. Oh, God, yeah. Because, see, the thing is, as I said, our industry is not highly regulated, but it's like anything. You need to engage someone who you trust to look after someone you love. So by shopping around, you're speaking to people, you're speaking to different directors, you're working out what services they offer. You know, you get an idea. Like, see, for me, the easiest way to put it, I had an Italian family in. They wanted a massive big coffin. And I don't know if it's a Croatian or Polish background in me. I went, oh, my God, you know, it's a $14,000 coffin. And I said, look, this coffin's nice here. It's 4.5. There's 10,000 left. I said, what's something you've always wanted? And the son always wanted a nice watch and the daughter wanted an antique bracelet. And I said to the son, well, what? Get this coffin here. You can, every time you tell your time, it's mum's last gift to you. And every time you hear that bangle jangle, it's mum's last gift to you, right? The thing is, yes, you're here to sell a product, but you don't take advantage of people's grief. But the whole thing for me is I would much rather a family engage the services of someone who they trust and build rapport with and are comfortable with. You know, price point is, yes, it's a factor, but I know for me personally, I would rather, regardless of price, that's why you've got all different plays. You've got premium brand suppliers like White Lady who do an amazing job, and then you've got, you know, that's why InvoCare's got their three branches. It's great. But, you know, you need to engage someone who you trust to look after someone you love.
People literally shop.
100%. They get quotes. They ring up and say, we're getting quotations. We go, look, that's fine. But, you know, we ask them, what are you after? What type of service do you want? Where do you want the service? You know, do you want someone to officiate it? Do you want flowers? And then you put together like a quotation, and we send out an itemized quote, and that's what we do. And then I've had people say to me in the past, oh, yes, you know, you were really well priced. I've had people that have said, oh, you know, you weren't the cheapest, but you spent the most time with me on the phone, and, you know, I'm more comfortable engaging you. I go, okay, thank you.
Can people get ripped off in your industry?
Yep.
Yeah, and is that something that have you dedicated an episode in your series to the pitfalls of being knocked off?
Not yet, Mark. The thing is with our industry, as I said, it's highly unregulated. There's a lot of people that are briefcase operators, okay? They don't own their own mortuary facilities. They don't own their own fleet. They hire everything in. So they hire a shelf in a mortuary. They're hiring cars. Whereas with, you know, players like us and other independents and the conglomerates, we own our own facilities. We've got our own mortuaries. We've got our own fleets. That's all owned by us. So with regulation, of course, comes change. So, and you've heard recently in the media about the cemetery amalgamations and all these sorts of things. It is, you know, I could write a book on all the dramas with cemeteries and crematorias currently and stakeholders like us with cemeteries. It's just ridiculous. And it's actually quite scary, Mark, when you join the dots like I have over the last 12 months and you look at the death sector holistically and you join the dots of all the instances that have happened, you go, holy shit, there's some major dramas going on here. Major.
I can imagine people who are grieving are quite vulnerable to being ripped off.
Of course.
And they, to some extent, might not shop. They just want to get the deal done. Like, let's just do this so they can put it behind themselves, so the burial's behind them, the whole crematorium, whatever it is, it's behind them, the cremation's all behind them. And therefore, the unsavoury characters who always seem to frequent people's grief would be somewhat prevalent in your industry, like they are in other industries, but in your industry, the same in my financial services industry, where people trying to borrow money, the same, because you know they're vulnerable, and you're saying there's no regulation. My financial services business is like heavily regulated. You're not regulated. What would you like to see more regulation in your industry? Is this something you would push for?
Yep, 100%. But you look at the United States; they have to do modules on funeral care. They lose, they're licensed. They lose their license if they don't comply. See, we're an accredited provider, so we comply with all the Australian standards of the funeral industry. But in the States, you actually have to go to university. You learn all facets of the death industry, whereas here you don't. And the thing is, like, that's why we've brought up Death Defined to educate people. Like, you know, I had an instance the other week where a family were going to inter their mother into a grave. And I looked at the invoice. I went, hang on, what's this here? And the daughter said, oh, well, we were just told we had to have that. And I went, that's bullshit. You don't have to have that. You don't have to have that at all. So I rang the body and I said, look, what's this? I said, they don't have to. It was nearly $1,700 I paid for about 6 years ago. And I said, the ashes have come in a container that have been supplied. I said, why'd you charge this amount? And it's because the family did not know that they did not need that component of the interment. They just paid it, $1,700. And then now this family's gotten a refund from the body that charged them initially.
So I think what you're doing, your education program, I think all these case studies, that would be another good case study. I mean, 100%. I think that and if you could somehow direct consumers of your product to there, because there's so many questions. I like the whole education program, all the episodes that you're doing, and you're putting on the right channel, YouTube. I guess what's really important is that you've got to make sure you get the traffic to your YouTube series. That's quite a powerful way of promoting yourself, but without promoting yourself. I quite like it a lot. I mean, because there are I think about it, a lot of questions that I don't know the answer to. My mother died a couple of years ago. I don't even know who organized the funeral. I didn't. It must be my sister or brother or something like that. I just turned up. But I remember I helped pay for it. But it's quite. I never even thought about these things. To be honest with you, but I just as you're speaking, I was thinking about something, and I've always wanted to ask someone like you this question. On my farm. My neighbor, who's it's 400 acre property next door to me, someone told me he died recently, and someone told me that he was buried on his farm, standing upright, because he always up on the hill, so he could sort of see his whole farm, because you know he was a very proud farmer, and he was very proud in the way he regenerated his farm back into wetlands. Can you get buried on your own property?
With permission, you can. But the Who's issue permission? With that is you have to get the I'm pretty sure it goes up to like New South Wales Health and the council and the government's permission.
Right.
Years ago, property owners could get buried on their farm. Like we've got a family farm at Oberon. One of our neighbours' father is actually buried on their property. But the issue now is they want to sell the farm, but now they've got to exhume him. They've got to exhume the body and put him into the cemetery to sell the farm. So again, there's all these catches and legislational things that you've got to go through.
And the other thing I want to ask you too, if you don't mind me asking this question, because that's why I like your education series. Are there rules around where you can spread the ashes of somebody? Let's say we got my mother's ashes, my dad has. I mean, can I just go down to the beach and just, you know, throw them all over the beach?
Do you want on the record or off the record?
Both.
Look, realistically, ashes can be scattered in a rose garden or at home. With scattering in the ocean and things like that, it can be seen as pollution, human remains, ashes. So, but then now there's all these environmentally boats and things that you can put ashes in, they sail out and sink. But ashes, historically, were interred. The family got them, you kept them in an urn on the mantelpiece. Scattering is now, you know, has come more popular in times past. So families ask me, I say, look, early morning, go where you want to go. Make sure you're not standing downwind because you'll get a mouthful of ashes, and do your scattering.
Right, okay. You can hear that so that's me. The off-the-record one, I guess. But because, I mean, I've saw quite romantic thoughts of, you know, spreading your mum or your friend or your kids or whoever it is, their ashes out at sea if they're a surfer, a surfboard rider, or alternatively at some favourite place of theirs, which may not be in your home, some other place that might be a favourite place of yours. Because I got a letter in relation to my farm, and it was from not the previous owners but the two previous owners before that, where they asked me if they could spread their grandfather's ashes on a fig tree that their grandfather planted on my property 100 years ago.
Wow.
And I said, yeah, no worries, you know, whatever.
Good man.
I don't give a shit. And I allowed them to do it. But and I often wondered whether it was illegal or legal. I mean, I didn't care, but illegal or legal. And I just thought there might have been some sort of rules about it then. But then again, I read stories where, you know, we sit on television where a whole lot of surfers have gone out into some place That's out right. in the middle of the in the ocean, and they drop their best friend's ashes in the sea, and they all sit around on their surfboards in a circle, and you know, sing Kumbaya, whatever they do, and all hang out. So that I guess people are breaking the rules around the ashes all the time. The other thing I want to ask you too, sorry to keep asking you questions, but
keep going.
The other thing I want to ask you too is, I guess I always say to people in business, you know, the best businesses are those businesses where it's a rising tide, and what I mean by that is, there's demand, and it's an increasing demand. And we have an aging population in Australia. I mean, not as bad as some nations, but Australia's pretty bad, relatively speaking. I guess that means you're going to be in more demand as time goes on.
The baby boomers, so basically the silent generation, which were from the 1920s upward, they're basically all departed. So now it's the baby boomers, which is the biggest death demographic over the next 20 years that's going to
hit
us. Yeah, so the baby boomers over the next 20 years are the biggest death demographic in recorded history. So what's going to happen now, and that's why you've gotten these conglomerates and these players that have come onto the market to make, you know, of course, to cash in, they're in business. And that's why you've got the whole big parliamentary reports tabled about, you know, the 11th hour, which is a really interesting report on the cemetery and burial cremation sector and what the big threats are to the Crown lands. And it's called the 11th hour. It is like 100 and something pages, but it's an amazing report. And it gives you a really good insight into where, you know, government's faltered, what needs to happen, how it needs to happen. And so all these things are all coming about now because they're saying we've got a shortage of land. Yeah, sure, we've got a shortage of land, but they want to bring in the renewable models and all these sort of like Greece, where they, you know, inter the body, then they exhume and give the family back the bones in years to come. But on the other hand too, when you look at it, it's a money-making machine for the government because they get to resell those plots time and time again, each time for more money, and you sign a lease for that plot. So... yeah, so it's going to be really interesting times moving forward with the baby boomers over the next 20 or so years. But I think with that, times are changing. Because see, we've done a few services for Italians and Greeks for cremations. They're traditionally buried. So the mentality is, and that's why one amazing duo I had on Death Defined was Aldo and Joe, Italian gentlemen in their 80s. We sat there drinking wine together, getting pissed. And they were amazing because they both want to be cremated. And I thought, wow, that's really interesting. And then, what we've done, you know, as a result of that, I said to Joe, so your mum's cremated. So often mum and dad are cremated. We've actually got quite a few ashes in store that we are waiting for their spouse to pass away, because when the spouse passes away, because they were both soulmates in life, we're going to mix their ashes together put them both in urns. So that's something that we're doing as well for families, is that, you know, putting mum and dad together and mixing their ashes, which is a beautiful idea. I brought that up to my mum and dad went, bullshit, I don't want her screaming in my ear for the rest of my life. Well, that's what my dad said. But some people like that, you know.
What are you going to do?
I've always thought I wanted the big, massive police escort and funeral service. But look, you know what, for me, I do want something. I want a funeral service. I don't know exactly. And it's funny, we... survey we put out is exactly where I'm at. I don't know. I haven't really thought about it, and I deal with death every day. Like, part of me goes, I want to be buried. The other part goes, no, I want to be cremated. My mum had a really good idea. She wants to be cremated. She's decided, and she's bought these little teddy bears. There's teddy bears that you get, and they've got little vials in them. And she wants some of her ashes put in each teddy bear for me and my sister, so we can give her a cuddle when she's gone. And I thought that was a really nice idea. And I went, oh God, I said, you know, that'll be nice, mum. But yeah, but you know, I don't know what I want. It's just really unusual. It's a good question.
My mum's ashes are still in an urn, or these, not quite an urn, but you know, those boxes that they have.
Yep.
And my dad, who's still alive, still puts my mother's ashes in the bedroom at night.
Yep.
Takes it out in the morning, turns the radio on, puts it in the kitchen while he has his cup of tea and whatever he has for breakfast, and turns the radio on. His mum used to love listening to music. And then then if it's a sunny day, he'll take her ashes outside. And
beautiful.
And he still has a moment with the ashes, and I think she's been passed away, I don't know, 3 or 4 years now.
That's beautiful.
And I think we underestimate, particularly for older people, mm-hmm. who have been together for a long, long time, how sort of attached they get to the ashes. And I think the ashes are actually becoming, because it's more tangible, it's probably better than like being buried in the ground.
Exactly.
For me to go to the bones, I've got to go to, you know, I've got to go to the cemetery. I've got to go out to Botany, or I've got to go to Rookwood or whatever it is. And that's sort of a punishment. I'd rather have the ashes somewhere around me where I can actually see them. And, you know, it'd be good to have a photograph on, or a painting or something on there of your mother or what she looked like, and sort of upgraded a little bit. So this has been a fascinating conversation.
Thank you.
I'll be honest with you, really fascinating. You are not what I expected to see, you know, like I sort of, you know, you're not dressed this way. You're sitting in the Joseph's chair. and you're full of energy and fun and stuff like that. You're not your Undertaker, the old school Undertaker that I saw when I was a kid. It's been very interesting. But I've been asking all the questions. But do you have a question for me?
Yeah, I do actually. I'd be really interested to know: do you have any major regrets in your life? And if so, what did you do to rectify it? Or if you could turn back the clock, would you go back and do it differently?
In business?
No, anything. Personal, business. But I think a lot of people on your show ask you about your business because you're such an amazing businessman and you're an inspiration for a lot of business owners. I think learning more about the personal mark would be nice, something that's happened maybe in your life that you regret.
Yeah, I will share something with you. I was always in a hurry in my 20s and probably in my definitely my 20s and probably in my 30s in a hurry and I was intellectually arrogant, thought I was smarter than everybody else, and I was intellectually intolerant, in that I couldn't put up with what I would consider someone not being able to understand the point I was trying to make, or what I would consider to be stupidity. And it's arrogance, intolerance, and not able to work at the pace that was presented to me, as opposed to my pace. And what that meant that I did was that I probably burned a lot of people around me, because some people either just want to work at a different pace, or just approach things intellectually differently to me, or alternatively were differently educated or had different levels of experience to me. And I would always, as I said, I sort of thought I was superior intellectually to people.
Thing.
This is in my 20s and 30s. When that's not the case, I might have had more experience or had slightly different specialized education in certain areas, or thought differently, but it didn't mean I was better. It just meant I was different, and or more importantly, they were different to me. In fact, most of them, in hindsight, I could put them into a bigger group than me, and to some extent, therefore, I'm the outsider. And I always thought of people as outsiders, and as a result of that, I was, as I said, intolerant and arrogant, and I burned people. And I do regret that. I do regret that. So the mentor business is a little bit of repair in that regard. So what I try to do today is actually help people and listen to their story and ask questions like I'm doing today on my podcast. Mm-hmm. This is a bit of I always often say I'm paying forward, but I'm also paying back. I'm paying back for all those years where I was probably too tough on people for the wrong reasons. And so that's my make good, if I could put it that way. As I'm older and I'm less in a hurry and I'm more tolerant and definitely trying to be less arrogant just by presenting people like you today and the people listening to your story and other people in all my podcasts and my straight talk show, just to help out for nothing. It's a free show. And if that helps one person, then I feel as though I paid back a little bit for what I did in my 20s and 30s.
That's brilliant, Mark. Like, you know, the one thing that Mum said to me when I was little, she said, never forget where you've come from and never forget the people who have helped you along your way. And that's how I try to live myself. But as you get older, you reflect on your life and I suppose, as you said, it comes with age. You know, you look back and thank you so much for answering that. So honestly, I really appreciate it.
Really nice to talk to you. Matt Quokka from Southern Cross Funeral. And by the way, they're direct in traffic. Southern Cross Funeral Directors. Good on you, mate.
Thanks, Mark. Take care.
Thanks for listening to The Mentor. Audio and production is by Jess Morley. And production assistants, Jonathan Leondis.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.